Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a fabulous and fun spotlight on the Southwest. Southwest. Say that three times really fast. Tonight, the show is made possible to the generous support of Discount Cab, who is owned by Total Transit. They're the little green cabs that you see around Tucson and Phoenix. And my personal request is call them if you're looking for a cab, because they support programs like this. They support six shows a year for nonprofits to help this word get put out. And I love them for what they do for the community, for how green they are. And remember to think about the little green cab when you're looking for a cab, and tell them Mrs. Green sent you so I can get some brownie points. So the name of our show is Bird Watching, Tucson Audubon Society Style. Our guest in studio, we actually have two guests. Karen Fogus is the executive director of the Tucson Audubon Society. She has really a lot to share with us. And then she brought a guest who I said, okay, Keith, you're going to be on the air. His name is Keith Ashley. And he is the helping with development as a development director. And I asked him if he could come help Mrs. Green's World work for that part too. So it's like we're already having fun. So Karen, welcome. Keith, welcome. Thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about what is the Tucson Audubon Society and how long has it been around?
Thank you for having us, Mrs. Green. We're delighted to be here. Tucson Audubon actually started in 1949, so it's been in the community.
Before I was born.
Yeah, but fortunately before I was born, too. It's been around for a long time. It started in a garage. Lots of things apparently start in garages.
It's true.
Yeah. And as did Tucson Audubon. And it was a group of people who love birds and wanted to protect and enjoy and help others enjoy the birds of Southeast Arizona. And so it just grew and grew and grew until I think the early 70s, they got their first office and maybe a staff person to go with that, but volunteers for all those years. And volunteers continue to be a very integral part of the organization.
And it's one of those things where, you know, you said enjoy. Birds bring all of us such great joy. If you're a consciously living person on the planet, I break for birds. I mean, it's really, you hear the cardinals. I have my little bird habitat out here with all the finches. And they do bring us great joy. So that's, I had no idea. And it's only really 1 year older than I am. So it's not like it started way before
it's
I did.
Years older than I am. So
I know. Well, I'm going to be 65 in December. And I'm telling everybody, save the date. It's Mrs. Green's birthday. One of the things that I don't think people are aware of and did shock me, I know the impact of ecotourism to some extent in Southern Arizona, because we are bird. We're not bird watchers, we're bird lookers or some other word I'm going to come out, which you're going to talk about. But tell us about the incredible positive financial impact that bird watching has just in Southern Arizona alone. That did knock my green socks off.
It is driven by the fact that Southeast Arizona is such an important part of the flyways that bring birds up from South America, clear up into the Arctic. And so you have this pass-through of an incredible array of species that come right smack through this area. And so it's a very rich area, and people who love birds and love to watch them at every level, whether it's from their feeders or from one of the canyons, they come because they know that they will see some extraordinary sights.
There are so many places to go and see them for free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I love. You can just go and really have a total scenic tour just for free. And I know
anywhere,
a lot of those places.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. Sabino Canyon. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
There's lots of places.
Very
Canyon.
Accessible. And
yes.
And so Southeast Arizona has become known for that. It's a destination for people who love birds and love to watch them. birders. And so they travel here. They stay in hotels. They buy their gear. They buy books to tell them where to go. And they eat in our restaurants and stay in our hotels and bring lots of money into the community as well.
And, you know, a little plug for places like Summit Hut, locally owned. It's not just the big national places, but Summit Hut is locally owned. You get great service. The money stays there. Hopefully anybody visiting will eat in a locally owned restaurant. But you're right, the hotels, I mean, there is such a ripple effect in terms of dollars. And, Keith, that's kind of like a little sidebar we can go off on because I have my great list of questions. But the idea of a dream being planted, I mean, we've been to Costa Rica, and how many hundreds of millions of dollars do they get just ecotourism? What about Southern Arizona? Could we be an ecotourist destination?
It would be incredible, wouldn't it?
I mean, it would.
You know, we live in this amazing biodiversity hotspot. All of these different ecoregions come together here, the Sonoran Desert, the Chihuahuan Desert. We have our Sky Islands, even the Great Plains touches, you know, the edge of the Sky Islands area. All these different influences coming together. We have so many birds, lizards, cactus, plants, butterflies, bugs, everything. We're like Costa Rica in that way. What if we could really preserve that with intention and have, you know, an economy that just keeps going and keeps building and makes it greener and more beautiful and more accessible to more people? I don't see why we couldn't have that dream as a way of preserving this area.
I honestly could not agree with you more when I think about our own personal lives for James and I and our kids and our grandchildren, the places that we go for a day trip that are free and that you can take a picnic. And where else can you go see? When we went to Madera Canyon the last time and stayed in this little funky motel with this tiny little room with hot plates and made our own meal, there were like, what, 15 wild turkey feeding. It was their regular time. And I mean, tour buses, tours, you know, the big vans were coming in like crazy from out of state to see something in our own backyard.
Mm-hmm. Which, how often has that been the case? That it's the people who live and work in an area are the last to visit, the last to, you know, understand what they have. So, which is part of why Tucson Audubon was formed, to help get that word out and help people connect with those things and enjoy them. And
there's everything. I mean, we had the mountain lion sighting. We had four bobcats in our yard about 4 months ago, and we got them on camera.
Isn't that amazing?
Running across the road. I mean, it was one of those weird things where my friend Kelly was filming me, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's a bobcat, and then three other ones came out. But that really speaks volumes about what we could create here in terms of ecotourism in a city that really needs some good news for economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I digress. You have a huge event that I did not know about, but now I do, and to know better is to do better, a festival each year, the Tucson Bird and Wildlife Festival. When is it? What is it? Who comes?
It's coming right up in August.
A couple of weeks.
It is. It's right around the corner. The 13th through the 16th, it's at the River Park Inn is where it's located. This is our fifth anniversary of putting on the festival. And what an amazing event for both those who come out of the area to come and enjoy our birds and all we have to offer at this time of year, and for the local community as well. There's all kinds of workshops and activities for kids and families.
It's a family event.
That's awesome.
One of the things I read about it and I loved. It's something you can do when you work all week. You don't want to really, well, I never wanted to leave my kids on the weekend. So this is, there's something for everyone. And I want to talk about some, you must be going on field trips. I'd love you to name some of the places. And then the second part of that question, which is not related, is why the middle of August? I probably know the answer. You know, we have monsoon, but you're the expert. I'm not. So what kind of side trips, field trips, are you planning?
We do both half-day and full-day trips. We do some that are close to Tucson, and then we go further afield. Yes, and it's really, there's something for everyone. I'm not from Tucson, so this is my first time attending the festival, and I'm really excited to see what it holds as well. I will tell you that most of those trips within hours of when we put them up are full because they're that popular. And people know, because they're led by expert birders, that they're going to see the birds that they came to Southeast Arizona to see. And so...
And can you buy... How does the pricing work? Can you sign up for a day, or is there a package, or how does the pricing work? Because people want to know that.
Yeah, it's kind of an open menu where you can come and
awesome.
you pick up the trips that you're interested in. The River Park Inn gives us a special rate for those who want to stay. There are workshops that go on during the day, so perhaps you go on a field trip on Friday, but you don't do one on Saturday, and you'll do it again on Sunday. You can fill that time with other activities.
Especially in Tucson. I mean, there's no lack of really, I mean, I love it. There's no lack of fun things to do. Feel free to get a glass of water. I swear, every time I get on the show, I'm thirsty. Keith, what did you want to say?
Well, one of the questions you asked is why August? Why middle of August?
Why August?
And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, it's actually a fantastic time to see our world here. It's a little stickier than usual. It's kind of warm. But the monsoon rains bring so much life to the desert and to the grasslands. If you haven't been, down to the Sonoida area, Empire Ranch during the monsoons, you haven't seen Southeast Arizona. Everything greens up. A lot of the birds have a second brood that time of year because there's all this new available food sources for them. All of a sudden, there are frogs in the desert, right? It's a really magical time here that people don't know about. And, I think we've all become pretty sensitive to the heat because we live in the air conditioning. But what happens is you're on a field trip, maybe the first hour or so you're noticing the heat, and then you forget because you're just taken in by the beauty and all of the new things that you're seeing. So it was pretty intentional to show people, actually, this is one of the magical times of year here. We also, I wasn't with Tucson Audubon when the festival began, but I know that part of the goal was to bring people here to boost the economy at this time of year when so many people leave Tucson and Southeast Arizona.
It is such a good point. And I say to people, we keep restaurants open in Tucson by eating locally.
Right.
And all of these things that we can do, go to the Tohono O'Chul Park early in the morning. You talk about, I know David Yetman, famous on PBS, Arizona Illustrated, his show for years and years, and I still watch David Yetman, is The Desert Speaks. And that's what you're talking about. Sometimes I put up on Instagram a picture, and it's of a cacti that opened up, and I say The Desert Speaks, because it is something, if you take the time, it's not brown and dry and hot. It's teeming with life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're talking, being an observer of nature.
Right.
The desert is so beautiful. From a distance, it oftentimes is not as appealing, but when you get down and into it, it is just amazingly beautiful.
And Purple Mountain Majesty, I remember my parents, when they first came to visit me, my mother told this story forever. She said to my father, if she thinks I'm moving here, she's crazy. And about 11 and a half months later, guess what? They were out of New Jersey because they fell in love with just that. There's mm-hmm. so much more than when you just land and you see all these cactus that mm-hmm. are like scary and you mm-hmm. think you're landing in the middle of nowhere. Seriously. Okay, so you can pay for different events, sign up and mm-hmm. do that. It is for families.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of free events too.
Awesome.
So, there's workshops, there's the activities for kids. They'll have wild animals that they can share with families. We'll have some nest box building activities. Those are not free because they require the materials.
Right,
but
right.
So much of this is just very accessible.
And made possible a lot because of volunteers.
Hugely.
Another thing about Tucson, the volunteerism blows me away.
Yeah.
The people that come and just give back. And, we've had the Tucson Wildlife Center on the show. Who the heck has a wildlife center in their
yeah,
town?
It's not amazing.
I mean, it's just really great, amazing partners. Mm-hmm. And again, our friends out there said, come in the spring. It's when all the babies are born and things are really teeming with life and you're out there. And have either one of you ever seen anything cuter than a baby quail? I'm hard pressed in my life to think about anything. And, you know, my wildlife habitat out there, I'll do an alert and I'll say, baby alert, baby alert. And it's because of all the baby quail. Okay, let me ask you this. I would put myself in the category of bird lover. You know, I break for birds. We have really good binoculars, which were like the investment of a lifetime for us, but we wanted to see them. Mm-hmm. We wanted to see those little birds up close and personal. Is there a difference between a bird watcher and a bird lover? What are your thoughts on that? Both of you. You're both, yes. Go ahead, Keith. He's chomping
at
the bit.
If you're talking to me about myself, there's not a difference because I'm a bird lover and I'm a birder.
Mm-hmm. Birder. That's the right word. Birder. Right.
Well, people what's that movie? There's not The Big Year. There's a movie about teenagers who are birders, and it's called The Bird Watcher's Guide to Everything or something like that. And they make an interesting distinction between birders and bird watchers. And in fact, there's a lot of distinctions you can make within this community in the different ways that people relate to birds. And I'm pretty fascinated by this. But one thing I think sometimes we don't think about is everyone has a relationship to birds.
I agree.
They speak a universal language, and they are so deeply embedded in our psyche. What's our national symbol? A bird. What's the symbol for peace? A bird. What do we associate with freedom and power and beauty? Birds. I mean, they're really incredible. I think the Audubon Society is, you mentioned when we first came in that you don't know the names of every bird. I think the Audubon Society is filled with people like that. I don't think everyone in the Audubon Society
is. It's just the love of birds. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And of course, we have people who can not only name every bird, they can tell you about the subspecies. They can tell you where that bird
makes the sounds.
Rest. Yeah. And
that's
incredible people to have around.
They are.
Because they can connect you with birds.
And if you're a bird lover, you want to hang around with the birders.
But it's a continuum, Mrs. Green. I think it's really important. And this is where I'm going to make my plug for kids and getting kids involved. Everybody starts somewhere, and it typically starts, somebody introduced us to nature and pointed out what that bird was and gave it a name, and that started that interest. Now, we progress differently. Some people stay at just watching from their windows, and others, as Keith said, they're ambitious and they're out there and they want to know everything and every nuance about birds. But unless somebody kind of ignites that fire, then It's
really,
iffy
really good
if
point.
It's going to happen. And it's so important that our kids have those opportunities to be able to engage and understand and value as well.
And it doesn't matter where you live. And I'm so sorry that I'm going to forget his name, but he's big in the world of nature. And he wrote the book, I will think about it, think about how many guests I've had on the show, but he talks about nature deficit disorder. Mm. As really a diagnosis. And I'll kick myself for not being the last child in the woods. I thought of it.
Yeah.
I had him on the show, and it is about that consciousness. Stop with your kids or grandkids. From the time my grandson was teeny tiny, what he loved was getting me out in the desert and going on our nature walks, Grandma.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to share something here that sort of ties some of this together.
I love this.
And plug a particular free natural history talk at the festival. On Sunday at 1:00, our restoration ecologist, Jonathan Horst, is giving a pretty relaxed free talk called Make Your Yard a Birding Hotspot.
Yes! I want to ring the bell. Feel this? I've done it. I rarely ring the bell anymore.
And I think, first of all, it's amazing what you can do with native plants. We have larval food source plants for butterflies. Plant them in your yard. You'll have a butterfly you never saw before. Because I don't know how they find them, but they find them quickly.
And pollinators are so critical to
exactly.
our food supply.
And it's a quality of life issue. I don't think
so
there's
anybody. What is that plant?
There are tons of them.
You can go to Green Things and they know. A lot of the nurseries know.
A lot of the nurseries. Desert Survivors, yes. Really, and Tohono O'odham both, really are specialists and can help you find those plants.
Definitely
we have
a
lot on
a
our website that can give you information. There's a lot of sources in Tucson for finding these very specific plants that support birds and other wildlife, and you can do it in your yard. That improves your quality of life, experience for your children, for
every
you.
Day. But every day.
I want to emphasize, too, though, you don't have to convert your whole yard. You can start with a 2x2 area.
With a plant.
Bring two plants in.
Right.
Yeah, a plant, two plants. You can. It doesn't have to be cost prohibitive.
A big, huge
It doesn't have to
not
be
at
a
makeover. All.
No, not at all. You just start small and, as Keith said, they find it, and then you start to see that joy and something different all the time, and you get excited, and then, well, then it's one more plant, and pretty soon, in my case, it was an addiction, but...
That's what happens to me. I have an addictive... We are so addicted to the birds, and Mr. Green is always running to the wild bird feed store because those finches, I mean, they are gorgeous, and they are there for our finch feeder every day.
And they eat like little pigs.
They do, That's what he says. He goes, the little piggies, they went through a whole feeder. And you can tell when, I think we can tell, when it's mating season or whatever, when they're breeding, because their activity is hyper. Mm-hmm. And this feeder is empty faster. And, you know, we're not writing it down, but we're watching it. And it's, and then you see not ever babies, but smaller ones. And who doesn't stop for a hummingbird?
That's right. And this comes back to the economics. I mean, when you invest in your yard that way, you're supporting all of these local organizations that support wildlife. But at the same time, what if everyone in Tucson was on a mission to get some more native plants into their yard with intention? Then how many more birds and butterflies and wildlife would we have in town? Making it more of a destination, right? There's a cumulative effect. There's a kind of synergy. As more people can share that vision, it makes our community more and more attractive to visitors from around the country. And you can't duplicate the Sonoran Desert anywhere, right?
Totally.
The Sonoran Desert is just here,
totally.
Only here. And Tucson already has wildlife just running through it.
I know.
Right?
You can get javelina in your garage when they're not even invited. It's like, oh my gosh, that's kind of scary, but it's true. And there's, you know, with the drier it gets, I mean, it's just, it's really an excellent, amazing adventure. But it does begin with what you talked about, the consciousness of it. And what if, Keith, what if everybody that listened to the show went out and bought one plant and started, or added another one, or found out what a good desert survivor is, because you want to be careful that they're not water suckers.
Mm-hmm. Native plants.
Right. Native
we want
plants.
Native plants. But, yes.
And you'll be surprised, even here in the Sonoran Desert, the plants you don't know, right? Pipe vine. We have a native pipe vine. It's not the most beautiful plant, but it has a pretty cool story. You know, it opens up these little flowers that look kind of like mouse ears. And flies, it kind of, apparently they smell like meat. I have one, but it doesn't smell like meat to me.
I want to know
but
what this
flies
is.
Flies come and pollinate it, and the pipevine swallowtail lays its eggs on it, and the caterpillars eat that plant and require it. Well, they're growing out in the desert, but most people, you know, we're unaware of it. It's not a saguaro cactus. There's all kinds of plants like that, many with beautiful blooms that you can have in your yard.
What's the name of it?
It's a pipe vine.
A pipe vine.
Right.
I mean, it's just like the things that I continue to learn on this Mrs. Green journey. And I love hearing about those things. What about, would there be some surprises? Like I told you off air, we love to go to the White Mountains. You know, we had a cabin in Greer. We still go back there. And to me, there's a nesting pair of bald eagles outside of Alpine.
Beautiful.
I'm telling you, we have gone, and you have to be, this is when you know you're a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, when you'll sit there for 3 hours watching them and finding them circling and then finding that there is a young one and just waiting and watching. And, you know,
Mrs. Green, you're speaking to the choir here. That doesn't sound odd to us at all.
You won't ever forget that experience, will you?
Ever. And you know what you said, I want to underscore it, underline it, exclamation point. Our grandkids would rather go and do that any day and twice on Sunday than anything else we do.
That's just wonderful.
We call them elk rides and, you know, deer rides and bird rides, and they'll be with us all day long. And just because they learned it from us, from their mother, be an observer of nature and don't make nature deficit disorder a problem, because you're talking about the connection that makes us live consciously in other ways. Mm-hmm. Less likely to throw something out of your car if you're going to be looking. Garbage, I mean, waste, really mattering in so many other ways. It makes you connected. Do either one of you have something we might be surprised to know of kinds of birds that are in Arizona? I was kind of surprised that the bald eagles stay year-round. They do stay? No? I think they do. It's been so mild. So I don't know. It doesn't matter. But you can see bald eagles in Arizona, not in the Grand Canyon, but right, you know, up the road about 4 hours.
You know, I moved here. I arrived in Tucson the 1st of March. So other than visiting here and contributing to the economy a few times through my life.
Shopping and spending money. Love that.
Yep. I feel like I am writing a whole new phase of my life, because I'm learning plants, I'm learning insects, I'm learning birds, I'm learning. It's almost overwhelming, but it's so exciting because it is such a rich and beautiful area. So I'm going to defer to my partner here today, because I'm sure he can answer that better than I can.
Well, a lot of things come to mind. I mean, one thing that I think we have a lot of in Tucson that people might not be aware of is owls. Owls have always been, you know, my favorite bird family, and I think they speak to so many people, not just to birders. And we have a lot of them. Of course, we don't tend to see them because they're out at night, and we're not. Though a lot of people, you know, hear them. We have a lot of great horned owls, screech owls. We started a nest box project a year and a half, 2 years ago for the American kestrel, beautiful sparrowhawk. It's the smallest falcon. And we haven't had any kestrels use the boxes, but we have screech owls moving in all over town. And I think that's pretty great.
So after we're off the air, you're just going to have to tell me a couple of secret locations, Keith. My gosh.
Elf owls, smallest owl in the world, can be found here. They don't come into the urban area that much, but they're all around on the outskirts of town. The whole population of elf owls, there's about 1 million of them, right? So a big city, they all pick up and fly off to Mexico for part of the year, and then we have them here part of the year. How cool is that?
It's amazing. And I have an owl story. So we were out at Biosphere the other day, and coming out of the Biosphere, an owl sitting there, and there's something magical about seeing an owl. And I think it speaks to what you said. And we have an owl in the neighborhood that I'll wake him up and say, "Babe, the owl's out there." And then we creep out and we have actually seen this huge owl. And boy, do they make a lot of noise. It's unbelievable. So I got the 2-minute warning. And I think this is the show that the three of us could probably do for another hour and a half. And just like, okay, did you hear about this one? Or did you ever go to this place? So let's talk about a call to action. The first one I can say is go buy a plant, everybody.
Yeah.
That's the first really big picture thing you can do. And then your website is Tucson Audubon with a D-A-U-D-U-B-O-N .org.
Mm-hmm.
You are on Facebook at Tucson Audubon. Follow that. I'm sure you can use sustainers, people to make a small donation.
Absolutely.
Big or small. Is there? And the festival, 13th to the 15th.
To the 16th. At the River Park Inn.
Go on the website.
Get information about it. We've got an incredible array. We've got field trips that go on throughout the year, 150 of them.
And you have lecture series. I mean, there's a lot going
on. There's a lot.
People get involved. Everybody, remember that Mrs. Green's world needs to be sustained. We have a sustainers program. Would love you to take a look at that and become an active member of keeping these shows alive. August 1st, Jonathan Greengrass, not making that up, Vice President of Development of Greystone. And then our next ETE, Chris Schmidt from Native Seed Search, another awesome thing that we have in Tucson. You guys are awesome, and thank you, Tucson Audubon Society, and to you too.
Thank you, Mrs. Green.